Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Thank you for tuning in to another exciting episode of Sports with Neil and Friends. Neil Roberts, Victor Vargas, and Zach Mitchell coming to you live from our various locations throughout the state of Washington. How are you guys doing tonight?
I am well, Neil.
Fantastic.
Says the zombie. Okay. So we have a lot of exciting things to discuss tonight. At the top of that list of exciting things to call in and discuss is going to be a not really exciting football game that had a surprisingly close score at the end, and that's obviously the game between Washington State and Boise State that occurred last Saturday. We've also got some Seahawks football in there, come from behind win despite some major issues on offense, as well as the Mariners have suddenly thrown themselves back into the MLB playoff race. Let's quickly start, though, with the Cougs and Zach's initial reaction to that football game.
Well, it's not a positive one. It was another one of the same performances that we've seen both early on this season with two games, and then in the last season, another shootout that doesn't end in WSU's favor, and against an opponent that you would think that they could beat. And I mean, if you want to take silver linings, it was a competitive game all throughout, but it's another one of those ones.
All throughout?
A bad bit. Well, not all throughout, but
all throughout the fourth quarter.
It left a bad taste in my mouth.
The part that Victor watched was competitive, so we can blame this loss on Victor.
That's not fair.
No, go ahead, Zach. I'm sorry.
I feel like I brought them back, to be quite honest, regarding as I finally saw some highlights before the fourth quarter, and yeah, they looked pretty terrible. Offense wasn't executing. This is the main
yeah.
issue.
Yeah. Zach, what else are you going to say? No?
I lost my train of thought.
You're welcome. I'm good at that. No, Victor. Victor actually nailed it on the head. The offense didn't execute the first quarter. Luke Falk was having trouble seeing safeties in coverage in the first couple of quarters, and it led to the team sputtering. That pick six, the safety was within a 2-yard radius of where he caught the football the entire time. So Luke started moving in that direction to dump the ball off on the out pass. I was kind of like, this isn't going to end well. I had a seat. I was pretty much right in between the goalposts down there in that south end zone that the Cougar drive into. And so for that, to watch the Falk shift over to where the defender was for that play was just a travesty. And that 7 points ended up being the difference. I will say this. The defense, which was – we – ripped in last week's episode, did a very good job against Boise State. Yeah, they didn't do that great a job against McNichols. Nick Gash scored a couple of touchdowns. But Boise State's offense only scored 24 points. What more could you ask from the offense, the defense going into that ball game? Not much more, right?
They did surprise me with that. They kept the Cougs in the game throughout, and especially the fourth quarter, even though, again, it was mainly the offense that wasn't able to execute. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand these Cougs sometimes. I mean, they do not – it seems like they're sleepwalking throughout especially, like, the first half. and they dig themselves in a hole. So it's just very frustrating to watch because this is something we've seen before, even last season, even though the Cougs won a bowl game. They had a lot of problems.
I mean,
throughout that season.
Yeah. Yeah, the offense's slow starts are nothing new, but it didn't cost them games last year because the defense is really good, but this year's defense just doesn't have the same oomph, especially now that Robert Barber has been expelled from WSU.
Yeah, right, and then it doesn't help that they've seen very undisciplined players this year regarding, I mean, even if they weren't responsible for some of these fans, except I can't remember. I'm pretty sure a couple of them are. I mean, honestly, that guy got expelled. But, I mean, just the fact that even being mentioned in those sorts of incidents is going to hurt their game.
Mm-hmm. Zach, what do you
think? Jerome Luani, when they got the Cougs got him back and he had the two picks, he looked like a bright spot on defense to have him back in the fold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, having Luani back was nice, and he was all over the field. I mean, he got burned a couple of times on play-action passes, but he was definitely more involved and much more in tune with what was going on than the safeties were last week, or 2 weeks ago against Eastern now.
Yeah. I mean, Boise State's quarterback was 19 for 35 passing for 299 yards, but he had one touchdown and three interceptions. So it's a bad feeling to lose to a quarterback with that stat line. I mean, I know you could look at his completion percentage and be like, oh, he had a good game. But, I mean, three picks, the Cougs just couldn't do enough with those turnovers.
No, and, I mean, two of those picks were really gift-wrapped by the decision-making process of the Boise State coaching staff. With two possessions, why are you throwing the football? With a two-possession lead with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, why are you throwing the football?
Yeah.
I don't understand
it. To play devil's advocate on that, I don't know if we can question the other team's coaching staff too much.
If they had lost that game because of those two, did that decision-making process, they were this close to losing that game because of their decision-making process.
Yeah. No,
the
I
game,
understand.
They statistically
little...
didn't dominate, but...
Yeah, it was a little shot at least.
Zach.
Yeah, I mean, some of those decisions are getting kind of old when we don't come out with the win, and now we have this aftermath that follows us in losses like this where we have these legal problems going on, players getting expelled, lots of comments from the coaches being hurled at the media and blaming other people. It's just not the best time to be a Cougs fan right now, but we'll see what happens throughout the course of the season.
And I think that's Leach's biggest problem is the whole scandal that's occurring outside the football field. I mean, some of his decisions, I know people have criticized. I think the fact that he doesn't even have control of his players. I know obviously like there might be a couple bad things. I mean, this is football. I mean, you know, this is college football. You're supposed to be disciplined. That's what the coaches are there for.
Yeah, college kids, as we all know, no matter of what stripe, aren't the most disciplined.
I mean, if you want to get into the win mentality, though, it's better to not, you know what I mean? You got to, if you want to party hard, you also got to play hard, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I mean, to be fair to Mike Leach, these are all off-season incidents when their workout time is restricted by the NCAA. But these players still should have known better. You will have one 9-1 season does not entitle you to another man's case of beer. One 9-man season does not entitle you to going to a party you weren't inviting to, and then when the host asks you to leave, throwing a punch. And these are all what we're getting from Pullman PD, and it's we all three know Pullman PD can be very thorough when they want to be, and not very thorough in other instances.
Yeah, but I think I know what you're saying. But I think it's more. I mean, those guys, they're football players. They just kind of, you know, everyone knows who they are, so they're more easy to target. I don't necessarily, I mean, it could be a race issue, but since there's no real evidence of that, I'm not going to say that it is. I'm more of a, you know, those guys, you are noticeable. People know who you are, so people are going to notice what you're doing.
Yeah, no, and I'm not saying that Pullman Pete is intentionally targeting football players. They're very good at over-policing everybody and not getting everybody involved or thoroughly investigating other leads. And we've all had experiences with that at some point. Just what Pullman PD does.
Right.
But again, as I stated, this is the attitude of a team that feels like it's entitled to something after 1-9-3 win. One.
And an 0-2 start to this season.
Yeah. No.
I mean, yeah, that last season was nice, but again, it was last season. You got to move on. You got to move on to better things.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I've had enough talking about a losing football team that keeps finding itself making new distractions. let's talk about a team that won its game this week. Also, a bit miraculously a bum quarterback on a quarterback's bum ankle. And obviously, we're talking about the Seattle Seahawks. And Russell Wilson's ankle, which is only going to be a concern here heading into week 2 against the Los Angeles Rams. I spent about 10 minutes practicing saying that, so I didn't say St. Louis.
It was the return of the heart attack Hawks from last year.
I'm not a big fan of that. I prefer the I'm going to punch you in the mouth, you're just going to have to try and stand up while I continue to punch you. On the gridiron, of course.
Miami's defense is slam tough, but I put a lot of the heart attack from that game on Russell's bum ankle. I'm hoping we have more smooth sailing against the Rams, especially after they got beaten down terribly on Monday Night Football against the 49ers.
I'm not so optimistic about that game.
I could definitely see the reasoning for that
nervous.
As well. The defensive line?
Yeah, but to me, the Rams just played so poorly against, I mean, a pretty mediocre team. I know the Rams have been a strong team. They swept us last year. Yeah.
Go ahead.
But, I think the Seahawks will come out with the win. Even though the Rams might trouble them a little bit, they'll actually, instead of last season when they got swept, it might be a similar game to what happened last Monday, a similar sort of game like that.
I can think of a few reasons to be concerned about this game. I would say...
The offensive line, for one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The offensive line is my biggest concern. That Rams defensive line is still really, really good. The offensive line had all sorts of trouble against Miami's front seven. And again, Miami has a pretty good front seven as well. But it's just, at some point, you have to wonder when this offensive line is going to cost it a win. A lot of wins, not just one or two.
And possibly Wilson's career, too. You have to take that into account.
Yeah. Very, very good point, Victor. Don't remind me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to take a moment here to admire the fact that Ndamukong Suh stepped on somebody's ankle, and it actually wasn't on purpose.
Right? I mean, that was
by
amazing. That might have been.
Go ahead, Victor.
Oh, no, I was going to say that might have been play of the week instead of all of the amazing catches that we saw. It was just, look, he did it on accident.
It wasn't in purpose, guys. Yeah, no, I was on the road back from Boise after that, so I was listening on the radio. I didn't get to see the play where Russell's ankle got stepped on until Monday, and it didn't look pretty. The fact that he was out there was shocking, but not really, if that makes sense. You'd think the Seahawks training staff would be able to sideline him for a little bit, but we get to see Russ again this week. Hopefully he doesn't die against the Rams, because we know that's what that defensive front seven can have in mind.
Yeah, and again, that's probably the biggest concern, because I think of it as a low-scoring game just because of the Rams' defense and the Rams' poor offense as well. I mean, I know they have Todd Gurley, but I mean, he got stuff in the last week, you know.
Yeah, really, if the Seahawks are able to key in on Todd Gurley, the Rams don't have much of a passing game, or at least they didn't in week one. They try really hard to get the ball to Tavon Austin, but he's more of a gadget player where they try to force the ball to him, and he seems to struggle to get open downfield, but they like to do a lot of end-arounds to him.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they're sticking with that. They're not going to go with Jared Goff, who... At this point, I don't know why you wouldn't, but
it's going to be Case Keenum again.
Trying to win. Yeah.
But it is the Rams' first game back in LA. I think they'll be fired up for that. They always wake up for the Seahawks games under Jeff Fisher. It's just a notorious record for beating Pete Carroll in some pretty obscure ways. And they are coming off a bad beating, so I feel like they'll be ready for this game.
Well, if I remember correctly, the Rams are 4 for the last 5, have won 4 out of the last 5 games against the Seahawks, and that's just astounding considering the success the Seahawks have had in the last 3 to 4 years. So,
yeah, especially when you take into account they had the rivalry with the 49ers that kind of got renewed a little bit with the Cardinals, and then yet the team that's been giving them all the crap over the last 2 years has been the Rams, who have been not a playoff team.
7-win Jeff.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound as good as 7-win Mark, does it?
I think those wins he gets against the Seahawks are probably going to help him keep his job. To be honest, beyond that, I mean, you guys are right. The Rams have been terrible or mediocre.
Yeah, I think that the interesting for me personally, one of the big matchups I'm going to watch is actually going to be the Seahawks front seven against the Rams offensive line. The Rams offensive line didn't provide a lot of protection for Keenum in the game against the Niners. He was constantly harassed in the backfield. He was forced out of the pocket. And eventually the offense just broke down. And part of that was Keenum held onto the ball a couple of times, but the Niners seemed to get a lot of penetration, and they got in the backfield a lot. And that's one of the reasons they were able to shut down Todd Gurley. And if the Seahawks can kind of replicate that formula a little bit, get in the backfield, take, as Zach said, key in on Gurley, put the ball in Keenum's hand and make him make plays, the fourth quarter could be very, very interesting in the Seahawks' favor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the
matchup. What matchups are you looking forward to?
Oh, the matchup I wanted
to see
Zach. Was the Seahawks offensive line against the Rams beastly front seven, and Aaron Donald, we thought maybe he would not play in this game based on his actions in the 49ers game where he made contact with an official, actually got ejected. But it looks like he's going to play, so that's trouble for the Seahawks, who are down their starting right guard already. Seti, who I haven't seen updated practice reports, but it looks like he may not play again. And then also what I mentioned before, the Seahawks front seven against Todd Gurley, just the defense overall and how we're able to shut him down, and hopefully the Rams offense as a whole.
What are you looking forward to here, Victor?
I mean, mainly the Seahawks defense against basically just Todd Gurley, because I mean, I don't think the Seahawks offense would be able to do a whole lot. I mean, they might. I'm hoping that they do just enough to win, because that O-line has a lot of problems. It's very, very sad to watch. So, I mean, because of excitement, I'm going for it. Them trying to stuff Todd Gurley.
Also, we have to point out we're all rooting for the tape around Russell Wilson's ankle.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to see Boykin against that Rams front seven. That would just be disastrous.
Yeah.
And now I have shivers. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Russell this week. It's going to be interesting to see if they get the run game going next week. Two really good front sevens in Miami and Los Angeles that the Seahawks are going up against. They've got to try and get back to the playoffs. They get back to the playoffs, they're going to need to get the offensive line fixed. And they're going to need to get some kind of deep playability going, because they didn't really take that many shots downfield offensively. And that was a big hindrance against what was in 2015 a pretty weak Miami secondary.
And they need to start using Jimmy Graham. Okay, because, I mean, you have to trade Max Ungar for him. I mean, at this point, you might as well use him. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but...
I'd love to see the deep passing game open up more. Paul Richardson is still almost invisible. I don't know if it's more him struggling it open or not being implemented in the game plan, but he's supposed to be the deep threat coming in. Lockett obviously
Paul
has
who?
That ability. And also, what did you say?
I said Paul who?
Oh, Richardson. Was that the joke?
Yes.
But also Luke Wilson as well, playing for the banged up Jimmy Graham. Graham did have the one catch for 11 yards, but we didn't see a lot of him. And on the play that Russell Wilson got injured, Luke Wilson was actually open about 50 yards downfield, but we weren't able to hit him. So I'd like to see him get into the deep passing game more as well. He seems to slip open quite a bit.
Yeah. Victor?
Oh, I thought I said it was Graham, mainly.
Yeah, right, you did. Okay, so we're all in agreement then. We want the deep passing game to open up a little bit more. What's the odds that Daryl Bell is actually going to open up the passing game? I don't have that.
He'll probably do what he usually does, and he'll be like more of an opportunist. If he sees something, he'll go for it, but it's not going to be really part of the game plan too much.
All right, so we got about 5 minutes here left in this episode. Excuse me, 6 minutes left here in this episode. Let's take a chance to talk about a team that we all gave up for dead about a week ago. A team that is now 10 games over 500, that has tonight off, that's won 8 straight games, and their playoff odds stand at about 23%, and they're only a game back in the second wild card spot behind Toronto.
Seattle
Mariners. No, the Storm actually already have a playoff spot.
I know.
Victor, let's start with you.
Great, because it's fun to watch these guys, but I mean, I really wish they have done this a little bit sooner. But, I mean, it is possible. I'm really interested to see what happens, because they are still kind of, I think that they have, I mean, the Orioles and the Blue Jays have to lose is the thing, which makes me nervous. I don't like it when any of my teams, not just like the Mariners, is dependent upon another team losing in order to gain a spot in the playoffs.
Does it help that the Mariners have to be in Toronto?
What?
The Mariners have 3 games against Toronto next week.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't check that schedule. But yeah.
And
so that's
going to
be very
ALE
interesting then.
And the AL, Toronto and Baltimore play each other a bunch, and then the Yankees are kind of hanging out around the fringe of the playoff race, play Baltimore
yeah.
and Toronto as well. So it's they're going to beat up on each other. The odds that one of those playoff spots, that one of the second wild card opens up, is pretty high. The Mariners just need to get through Toronto, and they need to get through this three games against Houston, three games against Toronto, six games against Houston down the stretch, and three against Toronto here. And if they can do that, then they can continue to beat up on the A's. And the Athletics, the A's and the Angels, they'll be in pretty good shape.
But let's just point out how many times you have to say if there, Neil.
One game out of the playoff race. Not a bad 1.5. Their playoff odds are at 29.2%. Tigers are sitting there at 28, and then the Blue Jays are at 48.5, and the Orioles at 46.5.
I mean, we are really looking at
Fangraphs.
A 1990, well, not quite as extreme as 1995, but it is kind of starting to get that fever a little bit more as they inch closer to in the wild card standings. Baltimore and Toronto are two tough squads to try to get past, so even with that three-game series with Toronto.
They've got a 2 out of 1 isn't going to do them any good against Toronto. Even though they're only a game and a half back and they'd gain a game in that instance, they stay within a game and a half. They really need a sweep, and they also need to put a dagger in Houston's playoff hopes this weekend in Seattle. They just need to sweep them aside. No ifs, ands, or buts. Knock them aside and just stick them, kick them out of the way.
Definitely, yeah.
But it'll... playoff baseball in Seattle. Be nice to see you again, wouldn't it?
It would.
It's been very long.
15 years.
The pessimist in me is remembering how many times this team has shattered our dreams, so to speak. And also, you can say this for a lot of situations because baseball is a fickle beast, but all those games where the Mariners lost one-run games this season. If they finished like one game out, you're just going to remember those the whole off season. But we'll see what happens and be an optimist about it.
Well, the Mariners aren't thriving off of one-run wins, and they're not losing because of one-run losses. They've won about as many one-run games as they've lost. It's about a 500 record. So those kind of cancel each other out. I'm thinking more of that epic C-Sheck collapse against Anaheim in April, where the Mariners scored 7 runs in the bottom of the eighth. And
or most of the post-April Taiwan Walker starts.
Yeah. Or the 1-9 road trip from a few weeks ago that made us all stick a fork in them, say they were dead. But they're not. They won 8 in the get row, and we're here now. Kind of crazy, Victor. What do you think?
Yeah, just because they managed to climb out of that hole. I didn't think they'd be able to do that, to be honest. That pessimism ending came out a little bit regarding the Mariners. But yeah, Adam Lind, especially, maybe it's got me back excited again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully he continues to make good contact with the ball. And Taiwan Walker just does not regress.
That was a pretty impressive start last night.
Yeah.
A really impressive start. Zach, you wrap this whole show up nice and pretty for us.
Go Hawks. Please win Cougs and make the damn playoffs, Mariners. Good
enough.
That's
it. That's a wrap. Thanks for listening to Sports with Neil on Blog Talk Radio. It was a pleasure seeing you. Pleasure broadcasting with you gentlemen tonight. And we'll see you all again next week. Have a good night.
Peace.